everybody. I'm Andy Weinberg, and welcome to episode... Dave, you want to give us a drum roll? Episode 50 of 50. The David Wasikinen In the Pocket podcast here on wildfireradio.com and phillyrockradio.com. I hope we may actually be back live on Philly Rock right now, but our fans will tell us that. And, of course, you can get all our episodes at in-the-pocket.simplecast.com or wherever else you get your podcasts. And here for our 50th episode, we are very fortunate and lucky to be joined in the studio by a guest making his unprecedented third appearance.
Oh, right. I forgot about the guest host thing.
Yes, right. He was on episode 3. Wow. He was on episode 33 when you talked to the late, great Glenn Goss. And Kenny Aronson is back with us in the studio. He's like our go-to. He's like Don Rickles on The Tonight Show.
I'm feeling like Mr. Warmth today, that's for sure.
Don't get him started.
Kenny Aronson here in the studio with us to help us celebrate our 50th episode.
Speaking of 50, I wish I was still 50.
You and me both, my friend. And we may hopefully be joined by another special guest over the phone a little
later.
We'll
save that for later.
Yeah. But hey, before we get started talking to Kenny, want to mention our great sponsors, gotpeace.com. Yeah. That's their website, gotpeace.com, or call them at 424-343-1213. They're dedicated to spreading a message of worldwide peace. Their goals are unity and happiness for everyone. It's a great message. And they got all kinds of very cool merchandise that all promotes peace. They got T-shirts. They got hats. They got these love cows and peace cows, a little stuffed animal that you can cuddle with and promote peace and love. They got these dog tag necklaces. They come in different colors, and each one promotes a different cause. You can get them in pink for breast cancer research. You can get them in green for environmental causes. You can get them in black, which helps promote or helps support people in recovery. So check out the different dog tags. Go on their website. They got fishing hats, sports caps, cool T-shirts. Again, it's gotpeace.com, 424-343-1213. Thank you so much for your continued support. And we're once again sponsored this week by the fine people at Behavioral Pediatrics and ABA Therapy Associates in Lansdale, Pennsylvania. They're working with autistic children, teens, and young adults, as well as people with other behavioral diagnoses. They do fantastic work over there. If this affects your family or if you know someone whose family is affected by this, please give them a call at 267-663-7141. All right. I think that takes care of the business for now. And now we can just have some fun with Ken. Kenny, what's up? How are you doing, man?
Oh, I'm doing good. Doing good. Just trying to stay busy. Just did some Yardbird shows. And we were down at the Robert E. Perilla Center in Maryland. And we did a show at the Suffolk County Theater in Riverhead, New York. And I got some stuff coming up here with Dave that I'm looking forward to, some In the Pocket shows or bar band shows. We're doing some gigs with the guitar player Quentin Jones.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, so, you know, just moving and grooving.
Keeping busy, as they say.
Yeah.
I mean, you've played with so many people. We could, you know, spend the whole hour just going through the list of people you played with, and we kind of did when you had you on before. But getting to play the songs of the Yardbirds, I mean, that's got to be a kick. I mean, these are some of the all-time great rock and roll songs, blues rock, and you just get to go out there.
My joke is, I don't know if I said this before, I don't mean to be redundant, but that band meant so much to me when I was a young teenager. My joke is that it took me 50 years to get the gig that I always thought I should have had when the original guy left. But I mean, I love that band, and it's a great band.
But
I love the music, and we have a great guitar player now. The other cat had to leave, and we just got a friend from New York City, Godfrey Townsend, who's used to play with John Entwistle and Jack Bruce and a lot of really great people. And he's in there now, and he's great. He's doing really good. So the band is really great. We were supposed to do a German tour. Unfortunately, I got canceled in November, but there's going to be stuff happening next year, so I'm really looking forward to that.
That's so cool.
And,
man,
Dave, you'll appreciate this. I mean, Kenny getting to work with a guy like Jim McCarty.
Oh,
I mean,
absolutely.
Just, you know,
we talk about it on the ride
Jim's
over.
Great. Sweet guy.
You know?
It's great.
Yeah, I mean, it's the fact that for me, again, the Yardbirds, a big influence growing up listening to them. It's funny, I came late to the party on that one because I was more of a Led Zeppelin. I loved the Jeff Beck group. And then I went backwards into the Yardbirds and started listening, you know, to, you know, their music. And
well, there might not there might not have been a Zeppelin without
the
Yardbirds.
Well, indeed.
No, I mean, if you think about the family tree, quote unquote, of the Yardbirds, and they produced arguably the three greatest guitar players in rock music, Clapton, Beck, and Page. And how music branches out from those three cats, it's really quite amazing how, if you think about how different music could be, would be, without the Yardbirds, it's pretty amazing, actually. It's mind-boggling to think about that.
And the beauty of, like, YouTube, you could there's some great, great Yardbirds clips from back in the day, and you, Kenny's turned me on to Bobby Graham, the session drummer, and he will talk about Jimmy Page coming up, and you watch Jimmy Page on YouTube playing with the Yardbirds and the command that he had with that band, and the band was terrific, man, you know, amazing. So there is just this incredible material and content that you can find now through
and
sites
all,
like
and
that.
And all the versions of it. I mean, they were more of a pure blues blues band with Clapton, you know, and then they got much more experimental with Page. I mean, with Beck. With and Beck. Then Page took it, and yet to another direction. And when you listen to the period of time when Page was there, you start to hear the formulation of music that you would ultimately hear really refined with Zeppelin. You know, it's just it's
Page,
a journey.
Jimmy Page, you know. because I you know, I like, and I've heard different stories, and you know, you read, like, I've read Bonzo books and the history going back about how they formed. When he formed Led Zeppelin out of the Yardbirds, was that like, okay, I'm going to start my own band, or was that just like a band disbanding, and he, like, was. You know, my guess, my trying to get at is, was Bonzo ever? I guess he thought of maybe joining the Yardbirds? That was never like something like that, right?
It was. The meese of the Yardbirds. You had Keith Relf and Jim McCarty forming Renaissance, and Jimmy Page inheriting. The remains of the Yardbirds with dates that had to be fulfilled in Sweden. And to fulfill those dates, he called it the New Yardbirds until they got those contractual things dealt with, and then it was changed to Led Zeppelin. But that New Yardbirds was Led Zeppelin.
See, that's the interesting part that Joe Bierkam would not know. You know, like that biz side, that it was like the reason, like, you know, the novice or somebody like going to see, well, why were they called the New Yardbirds?
Right.
Well, there was a business part of that
exactly.
No one thinks about that.
Yeah, they had to fulfill contractual shows.
And they were doing some Zeppelin stuff as the New Yardbirds before they became Zeppelin.
Yeah.
Dazed and Confused. They recorded Dazed and Confused,
right?
Or they performed it.
I mean, and if you listen, I can't think of the track off the top of my head, but there is a Yardbirds tune that Jimmy's on, where you hear the formulation of these solos that came later that were really refined on the first Zeppelin record, but you hear it in a way that's a bit disjointed. It hadn't been really put together yet as we know it, but it's really interesting. I love listening to that stuff and just sort of trying to find the roots of it and how it went from here to there. You know, it's a cool thing when you can check out the journey of stuff, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and Jimmy Page, I have this Yardbirds book where at the back of the book, it lists every session that Jimmy Page did as a session player.
Wow.
And it's just pages of all this obscure stuff that you've never heard of that he plays guitar on, you know. And then he used to do a lot of work with John Paul Jones and Bobby Graham on drums and, you know, as session cats.
Well, it's obviously a long legacy, and Kenny, you're still a part of it with the modern version of the Yardbirds,
But we were talking about that this morning because, you know, just guitar players, and you know, he's telling me about the thing. But you know, there is. I mean, I would imagine there's a little bit of pressure on whoever's playing guitar because
absolutely,
you know, that's a guy that's got it.
I was just thinking that same
thing. You have to show up and be. Not only, you know, it's like, who's the guy that's going to sell it? Sell it,
right.
You know, on stage every night, that fire that comes along.
Well,
with
you
that,
know, the first thing that you want is someone that truly loves the band as much as the other guys in the band, because I think you need to really come from a place where you respect that music. And you have to be good enough to cover a lot of ground because of the whole Clapton and Beck and Page aspect of it. There's a lot of stuff that needs to be performed. And, you know, it's some of it you want to hear kind of like what it was originally. And then you want to have a player that can take it a little bit further as well and hopefully has a personality that he can inject and bring it, you know, bring it a little bit further along if that's possible. But it's big shoes to fill, you know. It's a lot of it's a lot of pressure, you know.
Yeah.
It's three pairs of big shoes
right.
to fill.
Yeah,
it's really what it is, you know. Right. So but and our last guitar player, Johnny A, he did a great job as well. And Godfrey, our new guy, he's coming along great. But they both had different approaches to it, but they both Johnny did a great job and Godfrey's doing a great job.
That's cool.
So
let's jump around a little bit. When you were here last time, way back on episode 3, we talked a lot about the stories and Brother Louie, which these days is one of the highlights of In the Pocket shows. And there's, you know, there's so many highlights, but when Joey comes out and kills it on vocals and guitar. And then of course we got Kenny
vocals
on stage.
Guitar and hair.
And hair. Well,
you know, it's interesting how many people regarding Brother Louie that didn't know that Kenny was in the story.
Well, I love the fact that Joey wanted to record this song for In the Pocket without knowing that Kenny was involved in it. I mean,
it wasn't even for In the Pocket. It was recorded. Joe, they just happened to, Ed Abrams happened to know me and Kenny, asked us to play on it. And so it really evolved that way. And Joey, Ed Abrams had a lot to do with me discovering who Joey was. We see this kid, you know, not only he was great, but, you know, picking this classic song. And just the fact that we, you know, he lucked out in getting the bass player that who's still, you know, think about it. Kenny did that track back in what year did you do it?
1973.
So, you know, that's a lot of years ago, you know, but Kenny still plays his
ass
off.
Well, we have a live version that I pulled that I have ready to go. Marcus, can we jump ahead? Marcus Darpino, our original engineer producer,
is back with us in the studio.
Good to have Marcus back with us on this 50th episode of the In the Pocket podcast. Mm. Anyway, we have a live version of In the Pocket, doing Brother Louie. And Marcus, can you jump ahead to 350 on this track? Because we'll just jump right to Kenny's solo.
Yeah. Here. Yeah, I mean, that's a fun moment, too, that he gets to.
Yeah, Joey calls him out here. It's cool.
Yeah.
Open your ears and your eyes for Kenny Aronson, everybody. Welcome to the show.
Yeah. Where's this from?
This is just from the Ardmore, just 2 weeks ago.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now.
Again.
It's really great, though, man. It's so cool that we get to do that, though. It's so. You fought? I mean,
I just pulled it off YouTube. Somebody, I forget the guy's name, who posted it, but yeah, I just pulled it off YouTube.
Huh.
So it's an unauthorized live recording, I guess.
Yeah, it's fine. Man.
And for the audience out there who can't see me, my face is beet red right now.
He's such a great soloist, though. When I go see John Eddy, my late great friend Louis Appel would invite me anytime they were in Philadelphia to go see John Eddy. And I didn't know Kenny at the time. And so I could go see Louie because I adored the guy. Great drummer, great, was a great friend for a long, long time. And so I saw Kenny come out and do that thumping. He does this thumping solo, you know, that thing you do with your, I mean, it's different than most guys' funk thumpers.
Oh, do you mean the rockabilly slap
thing? That's it. Yeah. That's it. And I was like, I mean, because I knew Kenny because, again, I was a Derringer fan and I knew stories. I knew who he was. But, you know, when he played that, it was just, I was just completely blown away. And then I mentioned Louis.
Yeah, Louis. Louis Appel, New York drummer, died a few years ago now, and I think today was the anniversary. Yeah. So we're all kind of thinking about what we affectionately call the large one. He was larger than life. Really,
he could eat some pizza. That guy.
Oh, he can eat some pizza
burgers
and and he was just a piece of work and just a larger than life guy and a great drummer and
great drummer.
You know, I knew him, Lou, for many, many years. You know, he was from Long Island, so I knew him, you know, a lot from New York City.
Yeah.
But
did you play with him a lot of other places besides with John's band?
Well, yeah, I played with him with John Eddy for a really long time. But I used to play with him, you know, back in New York. You know, we used to just play in clubs and different places. And I just, you know, it's funny when you know somebody that long, you don't even remember how you met the guy. Mm. He was just a part of my life for so many years, you know. Yeah.
And, genuinely sweet human being.
And a great drummer.
Great drummer.
And he was really, I still remember, I mean, it would take forever to get out of a show because Louis was so meticulous about his drums. And he would just take his time setting them up and then, you know, packing up at the end of the show.
No
and he was so careful and he treated them with such love. And I just remember him tuning them and taking them and putting them back into his cases.
Aww.
And he was just really, really anal. And he just loved his drums. He just looked after them like unbelievable.
That's why, because when I met Louis, I think I met Louis through Liberty DeVito. That's, I think, because we had a common friend and Liberty loved him too. And they were turning me on to these drum heads called Canasonic heads. And Louis said, you got to use these heads. And I remember, I said, okay, I'm going to try them. So both him and Liberty DeVito told me to use these heads. And I'm playing the Greek Theater in L.A. And the first time I hit the head, heads usually break. It exploded.
Exploded.
I've never seen anything like it. But besides that, though, the thing with Lou, he also played drums with Debbie Gibson.
Debbie Gibson had the
big time with Tommy Williams.
Tommy
Williams was the music director who later, and then I met him, he was playing a show, and it was back in the 80s, so she was massive. We were doing pretty good, too, back at that day, and Louis was just, again, you know, he could talk drums all night, and what I loved about him, his generosity.
He was just a generous guy.
A humble guy, generous, which blew me away. How he would share ideas and share new discoveries of cool gear. He was that kind of guy, you know. So, that loss was a surprise to me because he was still so young.
And he had a great sound too.
Oh, always, man! Right?
Sound,
yeah, man. And that's interesting that you say that because a lot of guys don't realize. You know, like it's all in the hands. You know, it's like you could have all the greatest gear. You know, Rob Hyman would say this to me. He goes, Dave, I can tell when you're playing the drums because we have a sound. I mean, he's used to that sound. You knew Lou, you just know how they play them. And Louis had great touch and great feel. Now, remember the last time I saw you guys play at a backyard party in San Diego. I don't know if you remember this, but I came out. We really didn't know each other at the time, but Steve,
yeah, we did a bunch of private parties in that area.
I came
for
out
a couple of folks
I came out.
Those.
I came out to hang out and because I knew John and Louis.
That.
Yeah,
okay.
And we were out somewhere out in it was like northern part of San Diego, beautiful area. But John was doing these things, and you did that. Was it? Did you do a Skinner song? Did you do something like you did?
Yeah, play some Skinner.
Yeah, and it was
great tune.
Yeah, and I remember it was. I'm gonna tell you, the show was off the hook, and I was thinking, how do you guys do this kind of backyard party thing? They were the best at it. They were so good. It was PK, you,
yeah,
a guitar player PK, and John and Louis, And it was lights out, man. I remember thinking how great it was.
Yeah, know? And you know what? And I always locked in really well with Lou as well. You know, it was we had like a thing because we played together with John for a long time, and we just had all this stuff nailed. You know, and it was really consistent.
Yeah, you were. I remember thinking, man, it's tight, scary tight. That's how good it was.
Yeah.
It was really good.
Yeah.
You knew that's the to me, like I don't forget. You know, like I think about John Kuzma and Bobby Woods. I mean, we had a mechanism between the three of us. We didn't have to say anything. We just knew what the other one was going to do, which is in our DNA. It was almost like we were connected into the same brain.
Yeah, when you have that, it's a really great thing.
And that's the way you were with Louis. Obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
Just looked it up. You're right. Today is the anniversary of his death, October 17th, 2010. So it's been nine years.
Yeah, so
what
the crazy,
it was after his show in Vegas, right?
The crazy story was we were finishing up a week stint at Toby Keith's I Love This Bar and Grill in Vegas. And we used to play there two or three times a year. We'd be there for a week at a time. And my girlfriend Cheryl was out there with me. And we were going to have sushi the last night. We were going to go out to the sushi place with Lou that I had gone out to with him before.
Yeah.
And it was just crazy. And so it's Sunday evening, and we're trying to call Lou, and he's not answering his phone, and we're not answering the cell phone. He's not answering the room phone. I just figured he made some other plans because he had a lot of friends out there that were musicians. And I know he was, like, getting together with people having lunch and whatever. Anyway, make a long story short. We all go down to the dressing room, and we're ready to do the last show, and we're looking at the clock, and Lou's not there, and it's like John Eddie's going, we got to send somebody up to his room to see what's going on, because Lou is never late.
No.
And our guy that was out with us, helping us out, Mike, he got a security person and went up to the room, and Lou was just in bed like he was sleeping. It was just bizarre.
Big guy.
And Cheryl, my girlfriend and I, we had seen him the night before. We were the last ones to see him because we were all going to our rooms together.
Oh, man.
And we got off the elevator first. Lou was on a higher floor. And we just said, Lou, we'll see you tomorrow for sushi.
Yeah.
And that was it.
Yeah.
You know, it was just
that's devastating.
Really, it makes me.
I know. Yeah, I know.
It's really bizarre.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, Dad, it was almost like, are you kidding me? I love. We talk on the phone. I just love the guy. The guy was just great.
Yeah.
And it's sad that, you know, and over the last few years, you know, we've had to, on this very podcast, we've had a little grieving moments over people that we've lost and gone through that, you know. It's been actually very healing for me to do this because, you know, you don't have a lot of time to talk about got people like this, you know. So it's always good. You know, and you brought it up today about Louis, and you know, it's sad. It's sad, you know. But you guys had good times, man.
We had a great time. We'll always think about him. You know, everybody, if you knew Lou, you can't forget him, man. He was larger than life.
Yeah.
He was a great guy. And
he
was a real character. And I have lines in my face that are because
from laughing.
Of how much he made me laugh.
Yeah.
How hard he would
He was
make
funny.
Me laugh.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so, you know, a lot of good memories with him, though.
Yeah.
So.
Didn't he play with Southside for a while?
Yeah. He played with Southside. And, you know, Lou was just.
I like drummers like that can you know, he was a guy that you know had a toolbox, you know, that he could pull out of and pull off a lot of stuff. He had a swing to his playing too that I loved. You know, so that's always, you know, a special thing in a drummer, man.
Now, I'll tell you, the years that I played with him with John Eddie, that version of that band, we had like this thrust to it because it was
good,
because there was like power in the rhythm section in a way with Lou that was just
you can actually hear Kenny and Louie and the rest of John Eddie's band. There's a live album. I don't know if it's, I'm sure it's out of print by now, but maybe you can still get copies on John's website. Guy Walks Into a Bar, great live album, a great example of what you're talking about the power of that band. I think you guys were like a 6-piece band for that album.
That was a little bit larger. We would have Jeff Levine was on keyboards with us, you know,
and you had a second guitar player.
Had, I believe it was Andrew Carrillo at the time, another really great guitar player who is really does really good stuff. But good band. You know, we would expand a little bit when we did something like that. So Jeff would come in and play keyboards and Hammond.
I'm so reminded, like, you know, like last night, like I happened to tell Kenny on the way down, our friend Buddy Cash is moving to Arizona. And so I went to his farewell thing. Not everybody got the word about this thing going on. So Kenny was like, well, I didn't get it.
Well, I didn't get the word.
So we went, and it struck me. Yeah, I know. And he loves you too.
Great guy, man.
He loves you too. And it struck me last night. We were in Delco at a place called Tom and Jerry's, and the place was mobbed. And the bands, like everybody playing, was just so good. And I was thinking, man, there's just so much great talent out there, man. And they were great. And I ended up playing a couple of an A song and a couple of Hooters songs. And the guys knew the songs. The guy played the solo in Day by Day, which is not an easy solo. And I looked over, I said, it sounded like Eric, you know. So it was great fun. And it just reminded me, like when he was talking about you know, the guitar player and the other guys in the band, John Eddie's band, is like, you know, just so many great guys. And you get up to New York, like Staten Island or that area in New York. You grew up where?
I grew up in Brooklyn.
In Brooklyn.
There were a lot of cats that I knew were actually from Long Island.
Yeah.
Louis was from Long Island. Yeah. Brian Setzer was from Long
right.
Island.
Right. Gary, his brother.
Yeah,
and
there was
Gary,
a lot of good players out on the island.
Chasm, I think, lives out there these days.
I think Chasm was originally from out in Staten Island.
Yeah, right, Staten Island. Yeah, because I remember when the floods were going on. I actually played with him, and there were floods going on. But my point being, roundabout, was you know, I was in Delco, and great players, and you got, like, you get up to his area, and there's just so many guys that we were talking. I've been doing some teaching and at the School of Rock, and it's been fun. And Kenny said to me, because, so have you come across a kid that's like, you know, like a kid that can play Rings Around You yet? Because, you know, like these kids now, like we talk about it all the time, have such chops and such, like, there's such a array of opportunity to learn now online. I don't know if it was like this before, but I'm seeing guys that are just scary good coming up, and you're teaching them, like, go to tell them something, and they're like, oh, yeah, sure. Like a lot of Elons, right. You know. Like, Elon was a freak back then, but still amazing.
So you got to remember the names of these kids so that, like, in 5 years, when they're superstars, you're like, hey, I taught those kids. Right?
Well, I got one I was showing Kenny on a video today of Sirius, who's just a monster.
No, you know, this reminds me, many years ago when I was still living in Manhattan, I thought I might try giving some bass lessons just to, because I'm not really oriented towards being an instructor, but... For some reason, I thought, let me give it a shot. And I don't even know how I found anybody that was interested, but I remember the one day this young kid came by up to my apartment for a lesson, and he started playing, and I just went, why are you even here? Go away.
Oh, no.
Because you made me feel like a schmuck. I mean, this kid can just play. And I'm like, you don't need lessons from me. There's nothing I can help you with. You know?
Well, you probably could have told him to settle down a little bit.
Maybe that comes with maturity and experience. And I just said, nah, I don't think the teaching thing is for me.
I remember.
Did this kid turn out to be anybody?
I don't know.
I have no idea. we were doing a session, and there was a kid doing a friend of mine's son was doing a some sort of school project, so he could come in. He's a bass player. Apparently, like, you know, his dad always writes he's like the next great bass player of the world. And he's in the session, and he's like, you know, I think he said something to Kenny, like, you know, maybe you could try it like this. And I'm like, oh my God. He's like telling Kenny how to play the bass line, but Kenny was like, everything he plays is amazing, but it made me laugh that I'm like, you know, first of all, I'm thinking the gall of this kid, and then two, but, you know, there's some freaks out there, man.
Hey, I want to get back to something Kenny said when we were playing the clip of Brother Louie from In the Pocket, and Kenny said he was blushing. And obviously, you know, when you're on stage and you get to take a solo you seem to enjoy it. I mean, are you embarrassed by the attention or do you
afterwards? probably.
No, not at all. It's just some days you feel more attuned to whatever you're trying to do and it works, and other times when you're up there and you just know it's not quite right to you, and yet you're up there and there's nothing you can do about
it. Exactly.
So you just have to see it through, or maybe you cut it a little shorter, or I'm up there thinking, geez, I wish I had my distortion box right now. You know, it's... But that's just my nature. I'm not a soloist kind of person, and I'm most of the time I'm not really comfortable taking solos unless it's in a tune or in a feel that I'm really comfortable with.
Yeah.
But
everybody wants that moment.
What about when John used to play Dead Ends and he would let you not only take a bass solo, but you would get a vocal solo. You do a little Johnny Cash.
That was something that I was very comfortable with because of the feel and the rhythm and the kind of, you know, I love Johnny Cash and I love the rockabilly thing. And that's something that I was able to do, sort of adapting the upright slap technique to electric bass. And that always felt really good for me. Sometimes, though, with playing with John, the tempos of the evening can really vary. And every song has got a place that feels comfortable. And sometimes, though, certain things, if it's too fast, can make it really a little
And it could
difficult.
Be just very minute. I mean, tempo is an interesting thing.
And something could be a little slow and be difficult to play because you're used to actually playing it faster. So, you know, but that's always fun to play. I like that.
Nothing's worse than, I was talking another uncomfortable situation. So last night, I do this thing, and one of the guys singing, Paul, he said, I want you to play, can you play on this? There was a Dave Mason song they want to do, and I said, I don't know it. I heard it, you know? So I didn't want to let him down. I said, if you're okay with me going and kind of winging it, because I want you to play. So I got up and I play, and I'm like, why don't you sign up for this? You know what I mean? Like, I'm up there going like, fuck. You know, because I'm not sure I know.
Yeah, but do you think unless people in the audience are drummers, that they would have even noticed? Like,
I don't know. I was actually embarrassed. Not to the point where I was like embarrassed, but I was like, I don't know what I'm doing here. But I would manage to, because like you could hear it. I didn't know the parts. And the thing of it is that my buddy Tom, who Tommy Stewart's son, was playing. And he's his house drummer, great, great drummer. You know, like he knew all the parts to all the songs and he plays the song. So I'm like embarrassed thinking like, oh, this is a young buck out there that's just great. And I'm up there like just jacking it. Like, what am I doing? So I was telling Kenny, like, that's the that's like a bad feeling. Like, oh, I don't know what I'm doing and I want to represent, you know, you want to be good. And
well, how about when you guys play as the bar band?
Oh, well,
you don't rehearse every song?
No, we don't. Matter of fact, not at all. But I'm so comfortable playing with those guys that it doesn't matter.
That's a real comfortable situation, not only with the people, but with all the songs.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, but I was just going to say, to what you were saying, Dave, was that I like to try. I'm not an attention hog.
No.
I will go up and play if someone asks me if I feel comfortable about what it is they want me to do. But if I'm not comfortable about it, I don't want to go up there just for the sake of going up there. Yeah. I like to have a little bit of control over my situation. You know, I think at this point in my life, I should have the right to have a little bit of control.
We're at bar. We're in L.A. working, and we went over to a hotel bar, and we met this guy from Sony Records. And Kenny goes, "Listen, I don't want you to be offended by this, Dave. I'm going to tell you something, because I take fucking risks." And he goes, "You know, he was like busting my stones about like you know, it's not always good to don't do that. You know, like you go out like." You know, and I go, I know, you know, I'm not seriously like meatball management, trying to like make a meatball stick, you know, throwing it at the wall. But but I tend to kind of like, it makes me feel kind of like I like that little bit of edge. Yeah. I don't always consider what it does to somebody I'm playing with. And but he kind of busted. He said, you know, maybe a little less of that. You know what I mean? like playing something that, you know, like, so I'll go, like, well, I'll give that a shot, you know?
I like the bus balls.
But it was good. But, you know, like, I respect Kenny so much that I appreciate that coming from him, you know, depending on who it comes from, you know. It's good to be open-minded about that. Like, I'm talking about songs, like, you know, going at it. Because sometimes, you know, even within the pocket, we're not going to rehearse this. Listen to it, Kenny. But I assume, like, you know, he's so good. Like, really, does he ever – I don't think he's ever let me down. Even when he thinks he's not playing great, he's always done it, you know. So it's like, okay, But you want to feel comfortable is a nice thing when you're playing, especially a rhythm section. You know, like I've spent years playing with Rob Hyman and Eric Bazillion, who Rob likes, he's got to have that comfort zone. Max, so much so that I do a tour with the Hooters where I'm using about 80% of it playing to a click. Because as he got older, the voice needs to be in a certain place. So, you know, he needs the comfort. And now I'm comfortable playing like that. But when I walked in front of like thousands of people with a click in my head, what people don't think about is a click, you have to be centered within yourself. You know, when you go on stage with a little adrenaline going, you're juiced up. So you can tend to get edgy. But when you hear a click, that is totally in time. And you got to be the guy. And at first, man, it was hard, man. So hard doing that. Now I'm like, bring it on. You know, I'll take it. But, man, you know. And so not just us as a rhythm section, but, you know, the singer. They as they've gotten older, and I think more wiser, they've realized that they need more consistency. So, you know, they've made me better. And, you know, like, because you talked about that John Eddie thing about tempos, you know, like John is still in that pretty that place where he could still, you know, if the tempos, does he ever get upset when tempo's too fast? Does he ever get like pissed off?
Well, no, if the tempos are too fast, it's his fault.
It's his fault.
He's usually.
Well, yeah, true.
I mean,
true,
it's, I guess, it's either he's starting off the song or the drummer's starting off the song. And you know, a lot of times it takes a new drummer to kind of. Takes a little while for somebody to feel comfortable and know where certain songs are supposed to be tempo-wise. Yeah. John, who's been doing it for years, obviously, it's his music. Yeah. He can widely vary. I mean, sometimes he'll start a song and I look at the drum and go, oh boy, here we go. You know, but it could be extreme. It could be too slow fast. You know, and either way is not particularly good.
Well, you know, like, but, if it's not steady, you know, even too, like, I like, you know.
I mean, once we're in the groove, we're grooving whatever the tempo is. But that tempo can make certain things harder or easier to do. You know, it's just I mean, when I listen to some of the tempos, I can't believe he can sing to those tempos. I mean, I would be completely out of I wouldn't be able to. I'd faint from trying to breathe. I mean, sometimes singing, it's hard enough to play the bass, you know. But
I saw a drummer last night singing, guy that played with Jim Earnshaw was singing with Buddy and those guys, and they did a Kansas song, and the drummer was singing the high part. Carry on. Like, I was like, whoa. And he was playing drums. And I'm always impressed when you're a great, like, he was like a
Have you ever
singer.
Tried to sing while playing the drums at the same time?
No, but I'm working on a record. I'm singing, and I'm trying to be a better singer. Because I believe that anybody could, if you could talk, you could sing. I think.
I don't know about that. In my case, I don't know about that.
But if you're willing to put the work in, and
don't want to hear me sing.
Well, I've heard you sing, man. I was just talking about to Darren last night about it. I was saying, like, you know, because she loves that Abbey Road. They did the Abbey Road side with. She came in through the bathroom window where that whole section there, and there's some good vocals in it. She goes, a bar band could do that. You know, because I saw Buddy's band too, and I said, I'd like to play that, you know. But there's some vocals, so we got to sing.
My singing inspiration is Ringo.
See, well, there you go, you know. But and I'd like to do it and not use autotune. Like, I'm working on a record, and I was at Joey's place working on it, I'm singing, and I didn't, you know, like he said, just go for it. And I got stronger and stronger as I did it. But it's all new territory. And as, you know, like, I wish I would have done it years ago. Eric has always been very encouraging of me to sing something, but I just did. I was too into being a drummer, but now, like, since I play some guitar and I'm into getting better and stuff, like, it's just something that's a new challenge in life, you know. So Kenny and I are going to start a little duo.
Oh, singing duo. All right.
Woo.
Yeah. You can cover some Johnny Cash. That's in your wheelhouse, Kenny.
Yeah. Do a little Johnny.
Yeah, man. Yeah, you know, I mean, we're having fun, you know. I mean, that's the thing, man. We're having fun doing stuff. And, you know, I mean, I just like it that I still like it, you know.
I dig doing the bar band stuff.
What's that?
I like both versions of it. Yeah. Like, there's the Winkle version and the Steve Butler version.
Yes, indeed.
And I'm enjoying both.
Yeah, yeah. I'm
covering a lot of ground.
You know, I, my favorite moments, like I tell you, you know, like we each have them, but I do love playing. I love playing White Room.
Yeah,
I love.
But I love doing the Beatles tunes because you know what? When I was growing up, yeah. I was playing drums along to Beatle records. I never played bass along to Beatle records.
Yeah,
because at that time I was 11 years old. I wanted to play drums, so I'm having a blast just doing any Beatles stuff. It's great.
Yeah, man. I mean, that's, you know, you realize how, like last night.
And the Stones tunes.
Well, there's a record. Yeah, that's great stuff. We do 19th Nervous Breakdown. Yeah. And that's great. And Kenny gets to play. But I heard a Beatles remastered version of Abbey Road last night on the radio. Meg Griffin was playing.
Oh, yeah.
Man, it's so, so good. And because what's really gotten better for me is hearing the bass and drums. Oh, my God. You know, Ringo plays out of his mind.
Ringo,
on that. Ringo recorded.
Love Ringo.
What a creative guy. And just the way he plays. And, you know, people, like, he was a lefty playing a righty kid.
Yeah.
He started his fills with a left. And just the creativity and how he played is just magical. And they were all so good. And you listen to, now they're playing some of the stuff. They were playing a song last night called Shaking, but it was an old, I think it was a cover. And you could almost hear the progression into writing, because they were like playing these cover songs and they were learning, they were educating themselves as writers, as you know, knowing what we know about the Beatles today. When you go back and see chronologically what they were doing musically, it's you see how they were learning, you know, because they were doing, and these guys played all the time. There's stories of them playing in Hamburg is phenomenal. You know, I mean, like, you know, because they would practice and write songs and play for hours.
Can
and they
you
would
imagine having been, can you imagine being able to witness that happening?
Oh my
I mean,
God.
What must have been going on with them in that formulative period, so young over in Germany, doing every night, all night, just playing. That's all it was playing and then writing and just sort of figuring out where they're.
They were so cool, man. I mean, they were doing that. They just wanted to get better. There's a great series Kenny turned me on to of a session drummer, Bobby Graham, talking. He was the guy that played with the Kinks.
Right.
I don't know how many sessions, but he did a bunch. But he talks about, like, I'm going back just to the learning process and creativity. He talks about Jimmy Page as a kid in the studio. I'm going, Yardbirds thing? Yeah, sorry. But seeing the Beatles, how they developed, and then listening to Bobby Grant talk about Jimmy Page and talking about Olympic Studios, but he describes how it was funky in there, smelly in there. You know, because we can never, even when you see the videos, you never get, they should have like a touch and smell, because the smell, you smell the studio, you smell the sweat, and that's something you can't recreate other than, but he was talking about that. And my point being is, like, you know, that the way people develop, like the Beatles developed and Jimmy Page and Bobby, you know, like Bobby Graham, what was the other guy, Cattini?
Clem Cattini was the other session cat that did tons of records.
He's like into history. Like, I get like a lot of information from him about guys that were the unsung heroes of records. Like, for years, I thought it was Mick Avery playing on the Kinks records. You know, matter of fact, I got to ask you this. Victoria, Steve Butler posted Victoria not too long ago. Was that Mick? I think that was Mick Avery.
Oh, that's the Kinks.
That's the Kinks.
Yeah, because that was a little later. That was like 69. Yeah.
It was just,
because he was a great drummer. That
you know, all those early records by brand new groups going into the studio, you know, a lot of, I mean, historically, we all know now that most of the bands that we love from here in the States weren't them playing on it. It's the Wrecking Crew, or it's this group of people,
It's,
you know, Earl Palmer, or all, you know, New Orleans cats. Or,
he was great, that
guy. You know, Earl Palmer was the guy that they would hire to play the Looney Tunes cartoons, because he can read all that stuff.
Yeah.
And he did a lot of that kind of
work. He was the union. I met him. I didn't even know who it was. But I met him in L.A. because he was the head of the L.A. Musicians Union. He was the guy, you know. And I mean, I saw him. He had a white shirt on, a tie. And then one day, like, I think, because I knew his name through Lowell George. Like because he played on Lowell George records. And Lowell George loved his drumming. And then later on, you know, as I become more got into the history of stuff like that. But, you know, I go, oh, my God, I met the guy. And he was just like, You know, he just passed away recently, but he was, you know, he helped a lot of musicians. That's what kept him going. But
you
what
should read Earl's book.
I've got to pick it
you
up.
You should read that.
I'm going to get it.
He didn't keep really good logs.
He did not?
No.
Where, wow, really?
Like Carol Kay's got log books. She could probably tell you like every date she ever did on, you know, at what time of the day it was. Earl apparently was, I think it was in his book he admits he didn't really do a good job of record keeping, but it's funny.
I'm amazed when I see, like, Steve Churchard, great engineer, worked for Jeff Emmerich, was George Martin's chief engineer at Air. Good, we became good friends because he was an engineer that worked on some Hooters stuff. And when I did any kind of recording with him, first of all, I was always grateful because he made drums sound amazing. He was like one of these guys that can make anything sound amazing under any condition. Mike genius. Those old school guys really knew the mics. And his record keeping was phenomenal. Like, I got a feeling you'd be like that. Like, this guy detailed, like, the notes of how, you know, what exactly was going on, what mic he used, how he approached pick, non-pick, what heads. I mean, just stuff that you're like, whoa.
Write it all down. Keep a record if you have to go back and find it and correct something or want to do it again. Or, you know, just
That's amazing.
That's paying attention to details without a doubt. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, an engineer should do that.
Yeah. Yeah, engineers. Musicians. I'm amazed when musicians do it, you know. Do you think Bobby Schnarr did that?
No.
You know, there's certain guys you go, you think he took any notes? Or like, you know, I mean, I'm always amazed. There's a lot of guys, and I'm finding this true. A lot of drummers out there, like, tend to be, like, guys that kind of, there's a lot of crazy-ass drummers in the world. Crazy. And then there's drummers that, like, are, like, pretty freaking organized. They, like, keep stuff together.
Where do you fit in that, Dave?
I'm pretty crazy. I've had my moments. I'm trying. I've really, I've worked at trying to be more, I don't know, detail-oriented.
I think that Dallin's influence on that.
Yeah, yeah. She's been, you know what? Both our wives, our ladies, have been very influential and good at making us take note of that. And I've tried to be better because I had a period. Like I was telling Kenny that I just, when my eyes done, I had a bad period there for 10 years where with the drug thing, where, like, you know, when they have to take anesthesia, give me anesthesia, it takes a, you know, it's, you know, it's not always like he's done. It's like, bring the doctor in.
You know
what I mean? Because I wasn't a good boy for 10 years.
A couple of weeks ago, we were doing an ITP gig, and it was after his first cataract surgery. And he looks at me and he goes, you know, Kenny, you're a really handsome man.
So the surgery didn't work.
Oh, so I don't know if I tell you. Yeah, it's funny. Well, this... We're you know, we get together, we talk about medical stuff because we're at that point, you know, like, well, what are you doing in insurance? But but I had this eye thing done. I have monovision and I had my eyes corrected, and it's amazing. It's really amazing how I can see, and it's like a remarkable thing that people could have done easily. And my doctor was a whiz, and I'm just doing the drops now, but, like, now I'm enjoying the distance and the years. We did a gig 2 days after I had the surgery. I had to wear glasses, and, you know, it was just fun. And my doctor said to me, after he gave my post, I had a week examination yesterday of the lungs. He said, so, because I played a gig with Laura Mann on Friday night, which was really fun, you know, big band, and there was a lot of pressure because I didn't know any of the songs. I had to get it together in a couple days, and I had to have my surgery, but it was like a little bit like I had to. Here's one of the beauties that, because, like, I was using some electronics, and I have, you know, that stuff you have to be able to see, and you have to, you know, read and do all this stuff. And before, when I was putting glasses on, fuck, I can't see it. Like, that's a bad moment, and I realized, like, because now, like, I want to tell my friends, go get this done, because it's so much better, man. Like, I'm not struggling to read. I got freaking 20/20 vision, and when you're doing music and you have to be on top of reading things or, you know, programming something, you better be able to see us. You're playing another song.
So this reminds me, a few years ago, I was using an Ibanez bass that had a blonde maple neck.
Okay.
And the dots on the side were black, but they were tiny. And I actually found myself getting to the point where I couldn't see on stage exactly the right position to be in, depending on the light. And right. You know how lighting could be on stage.
Sure, sure.
It's usually far from perfect. So I took a hole puncher and I cut out little paper holes with the hole puncher, and I painted them black with a magic with a black magic marker, and I taped them on the side of my neck, but they were like big, so now I could see in the dark, man. It's just like, oh my God.
Yeah, man. I mean, you do what you do.
What's happening to us, right?
Yeah, you do what you have to do. Yes. You know, it's.
Hey, do you guys, changing subject completely, and obviously Kenny's played with, as have you, Dave, played with a bunch of Rock and Roll Hall of Famers through the years. I mean, we didn't even talk about today because we did last time. Kenny spent a year with Bob Dylan and auditioned for the Rolling Stones, played with Joan Jett, so a whole lot of legends. Right. Do you guys have any opinions on this year's nominees, or have you seen the list of nominees?
Well, I got one strong opinion.
Todd.
Todd.
Yeah.
And Todd Rundgren is, it's like, you know, are you kidding me? That, I mean, what an innovator. I found out the other day that he's going to induct us into the Philadelphia Walk of Fame, which was, I was blown away. As influential as the Beatles were on me, Todd and Nas, they were that for me too. I mean, as much as, because I think about being seventh grade at Roosevelt Middle School or junior high, whatever it was. I was in seventh grade. I remember going to the canteen. It was like a dance, and "Hello, It's Me" came on, and I think Stooky sang it at the time. But I was mesmerized, and I remember like I got balls enough to ask a girl to dance. You know, like I was like I this song, and you know, then either Fear or like whatever kicked into me. But Todd Rundgren, that's when I, who did that? And then Wibbage, I was listening to radio, and you hear "Open My Eyes." Todd was like, you know, and how he's not in already blows my mind. But if he doesn't get in this time,
second year in a row, so it's the kind of thing you're afraid if he doesn't get in after two straight years, they might leave him off the ballot for a little bit. So
it would be a sin. I mean, there are other Pat Benatar's on the list, right?
Yeah, Pat Benatar. You know, I got the whole list here. Yeah. If you
who's there?
Well, I mean, Pat Benatar. Couple of 70s bands that Thin Lizzy and T-Rex. I mean, you can make a case for either of them.
Thin Lizzy. Yeah. T-Rex, both of them. Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, like T-Rex, I remember T-Rex was the first glam band. Like, I remember it wasn't like I was in the late, in the 70s, 73, 74. I was so into Bowie and T-Rex and Jeepster. And I liked those records. And I remember even knowing, like, it's not like the greatest playing in the world, but.
Not the greatest playing, but those are great records.
Songs and great records.
I saw them live, and they were, you know, kind of sloppy or whatever, the record, those are great records.
Mark Bolan was just an amazing.
Well, that's all Tony Visconti producing.
Yeah,
he's
was
just
amazing.
A great producer.
Yeah, man. That's where he really, like, earned his producer chops. That guy, he was like, he did a great job with T-Rex. And Thin Lizzy, I mean, those... What a band. I mean, you look, that's another one. If you're not familiar with Thin Lizzy, go back and look up some of the YouTube stuff with Thin Lizzy, and they were just
right. It's a shame that, you know, most of the world only knows them for "Boys Are Back in Town" because they got so many other great songs, and they were great live, at least from the live album. I never saw them, but
great. I mean, that's just
I guess I won't go through the whole list because there's
there's
16.
Run off the list.
Well, we mentioned Todd, we mentioned T-Rex and Thin Lizzy, mentioned Pat Benatar. Couple, you know, very influential bands in their genres, Kraftwerk and MC5.
Oh, well, MC5, man. Yeah. Wayne, that band was Detroit band.
Dave,
I remember Rob Kramer. I met the guitar player. Was it Wayne Kramer? My buddy Paul Dugan lived in around 10th Street in the Bowery, like in the part of New York, Houston Street.
Houston Street.
And I remember he said the guy from the MC5 lives there. I knocked on his door, and he came to the door, and he was like, "Yeah, it's the guy." You know, they were a raucous rock and roll band. I mean, they, you know, that's when I knew, like, because the Detroit Wheels coming out of there. There are serious cats coming out of Detroit that were just, like, they're in as cold, and they learn to play, and they played with fury, man. It was, like, amazing. Great band.
Kenny's nodding. You got anything to add here?
You know what? I have opinions, but I'm going to keep.
No, come on, man. No. Come on, man. I want to hear it really because I like because you. We've had, you know, you
okay,
about different
you know
players
it's
like Johnny.
It's called the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Yeah. I think it should stick to rock and roll music.
Oh, you mean about that, like when you're talking about Kraftwerk or something like
well,
that?
Well, no.
Well, like Whitney Houston and Notorious B.I.G. are on the ballot this year.
Oh, right.
Yeah, I just think,
yeah.
And I don't mean to sound like a segregationist, but I just think they should, if you're calling it the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, it should be about rock and roll.
Well, they changed that a long time ago.
Well, right.
That's just you know, the way I feel about it.
Yeah, when they, you know.
You know what? I don't really pay attention to it. I don't really even.
Yeah.
I don't,
it's interesting. I'd like to have Greg, our friend Greg Harris.
Greg Harris, the president from Bucks County native. Yeah. Where
you know
actually,
what?
Because I want to know more about that.
What I like is the fact that a lot of my studio session favorite people finally got recognized. You know, Hal Blaine and James Jamerson and people like that who were part of making so many
I heard
great
there was
records.
Some people, you had a contingency of people pushing for
you
to be in that bass player. You are a rock legend, man.
Nah.
He was Rolling Stones bassist of the year.
Yeah, I mean that's not small potatoes, my friend.
Yes, but you know what? Personally, it all means nothing to me. I don't care about any of that stuff.
I know.
Don't care.
But I understand where they're coming from. I do as somebody who knows what you do.
I appreciate it, but it doesn't really mean anything.
You know, you realize. I mean, you know, because I know you like you can appreciate like when you talked about the kid playing. You see that. You know that. Like last night, I'm watching guys play. I'm going, that guy plays rings around me, man. It's great. You know, it's. Amazing to see dudes like that.
Well, just so we don't get accused of leaving anybody out, I'll just run down the rest of the nominees. For Dave Matthews Band, no comment. Depeche Mode, Doobie Brothers. We mentioned Whitney Houston, Judas Priest. If you're gonna recognize metal, Judas Priest absolutely deserves.
I like
to
Depeche
be.
Mode too. Yeah. I think they're great. Oh,
yeah. Motorhead, another.
Lemmy.
Nine Inch Nails.
Yeah, Elon man.
If Nine Inch Nails gets in, the only inductee is going to be Trent Reznor.
He's the only one, right?
Right, because there's so many configurations.
Yeah,
in the band.
I know.
Like the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame tells you who gets to go in if you get inducted, and if in the case of Nine Inch Nails, it would only be Trent.
Yeah.
But and then we've mentioned Notorious B.I.G. Rufus featuring Chaka Khan and Soundgarden, another more recent band. But, anyway.
How many of them are there?
There's 16 nominees, and they usually induct anywhere from 5 to 7. So,
somebody will be left off.
Well, a lot are going to be left off.
I mean, look, it's I understand Kenny's point there, you know.
Well, it's long since been just, and their argument is, well, it all stems from rock and roll. But if you're going to incorporate R&B rap and pop, then what? How about country and jazz? Yeah. There's a lot of country and that also kind of.
Yeah. Well, Steve Earle walks that line, you know. Yeah. I mean, yeah, Copperhead Rose, a rock rock record, man. The Todd thing, if that doesn't happen for him this year, I usually don't get pissed off at stuff, but I might get pissed off at this one.
Well, here's another reason we can get pissed off. Little Feet has never even been nominated.
I mean, that's
They've
amazing.
Never even been nominated.
How that is possible is what a band.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, Paul Barano, who's been on our podcast, he's having a tough time. So, I'm you know, like, I would love to, like, that's the kind of stuff that's got to happen before.
Well, how
like
about
Richie.
They didn't induct Yes until after Chris Squire had died?
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to recognize prog rock, Yes should have been in 20 years before they
got in. Doesn't make any sense to me at all, which is why I don't even pay attention to it.
All right. Well, then we just spent way too much time talking about this for Kenny. So. Hey, let's take a quick break and hear from our sponsors at ABA, Behavioral Pediatrics and ABA Therapy Associates, and then we'll be back with some more conversations with the great Kenny Aronson.
Hi, my name is Gabe, and I have autism. When I was diagnosed with autism, I realized it was hard for me to do what people call normal. For example, I would get easily upset and overreact to small problems. When it was time for me to go to college, I had an especially hard time. That's when I went to Behavioral Pediatrics and ABA Therapy Associates.
Gabe made the right choice.
They helped me prepare for college with my interests in mind. They taught me coping strategies, organization skills, and self-advocacy. Not only that, they boosted my confidence using evidence-based treatment programs such as Think Confident, Be Confident. This helped me prepare for employment opportunities as a peer mentor here at Behavioral Pediatrics and ABA Therapy Associates.
We are dedicated to improving the lives of teens and young adults with autism.
Thanks to them, I'm better prepared for college and can continue my life's journey. Now I can pursue a career in animation and continue my job as a peer mentor. Behavioral Pediatrics and ABA Therapy Associates in Lansdale, PA. Call us at 267-663-7141.
We're back here with Kenny Aronson. Hey, Ken, let's talk about some new work you've been doing with the great guitarist Tom Guerra.
Tom, man, what a great guy. I like Tom. Good man, Tom.
You guys have put out a couple albums.
Well, he's, you know what? One of the things I admire about Tom is he just writes, keeps writing. He's just always writing songs. It's like, I'm not a songwriter, you know?
Although you have some credits on
work. I've written a few things over many, many years. Once in a Blue Moon, I write a song. You know, I had a song that I did with Joan Jett and then Back in Dust. But I admire people who are songwriters because I'm not creative in that way. But over the last couple of years, just Tom and I talked about this and that, and hey, I'm doing this. You want to play some tracks? And I go, yeah. Just whenever you got something, send it to me. And I get up in the morning, I have my oatmeal, and I'm in my pajamas, and I'm cutting bass tracks for Tom Guerra. It's great, you know. And he writes some really interesting stuff, and he kind of, for the most part, gives me a lot of freedom with it, you know. You know, like the process for me being creative as a bassist is, you know, you hear something, I'll put on a Tom Guerra song, and I'm sitting and I'm just playing along with it, and I'm recording myself because you never know what you're going to get, so you want to try to just record. Usually the first couple of passes, you're playing too many notes, and you're that. And then you pull back and you listen to it, and then you start to edit yourself. Or I'll send him some things, and I'll go, well, what do you think of this? And then he'll go, oh yeah, I like this, and maybe over here you can keep it a little bit more simple because the vocal, and it's and you just kind of work together that way. And we just text back and forth, and I send him MP3s, and then he gives me his feedback, and then I continue working on it, and then I send him a track by the end of the day or so. He's got a track, you know, and it's fun to do that, and I like what he does.
That's great.
He comes from, you know, he's got a lot of different influences and things, and I get to play different instruments that I have around that I normally wouldn't use live, because when I'm playing live, I need to use something that really holds up to the aggressiveness that I am as a live player. But in the studio, I can try different basses and different sounds and just different ways of recording those instruments, which is nice because that's where I can get a little bit more creative. And then if I hear something on my own, for instance, if I'm listening to a song and I'll get an idea for maybe doing a baritone or a six-string bass part, which is kind of like a low twangy kind of thing, or if I hear something where I can play some steel guitar or dobro, I'll just put it down and send it to him. And if he likes it, he'll use it. You know,
wow.
Great. So,
you guys are credited with co-writing a song. I kind of like. I don't know if you want to, if we can play a few minutes of it. A song called "The Lion King."
Yeah.
And that's
so
LYIN apostrophe.
Yes.
So I think we know what it refers to. But
So that came about when there was some hope that the Yardbirds might do a record.
Yeah.
And we were doing a GoFundMe campaign trying to raise money and interest in that. So the whole thing was that the band would be invited to participate in the writing process. So Jim McCarty had some songs and Johnny A wrote some songs. And I was thinking, well, I tend to work better when I'm in working with somebody else, and I was like lying in bed one night thinking, geez, who would be comfortable for me to try to write some songs with? Because I tend to have more musical ideas as opposed to lyrical ideas.
Yeah.
And it just one night I'm lying in bed and it just flashed, call Tom Guerra. He's probably going to be interested in it. So I called Tom and he was totally into it. And we started throwing back ideas back and forth, and the Lion King was one of them.
That's a great way to work too.
We're all feeling the way we are about how things are in the world and politics these days and what's going on. So he had some things to say about that, and I helped him with the music and the arrangements.
Let's hear a little of it. It's this "The Lion King," co-written by Tom Guerra and Kenny Aronson. This is on Tom's 2018 album, "The American Garden."
Down live in your palace.
That's cool, man. That's cool.
So that one came about where that was a lot of my music ideas on that one, and it was also an excuse to use my mid-60s Epiphone Rivoli bass, which is the Yardbirds bass.
You use that with her?
And, yeah. You know, I had to try to use that, of course.
Sounds
so
good.
But, yeah, you know, it's one of those things where I was, like, listening a lot to Underground Garage at the time to sort of get into my 60s garage band mentality and just, you know, because I love Underground Garage.
Me too.
I listen to it a lot. And, and you know, and then I would just have a guitar. In every room, there'd be a guitar, so I could just pick up a guitar. And just stuff started would fall out, and I would just do some quick demos in my studio and send them off, you know, and try to, you know, together, just back and forth, we came up with the tune.
That's
a cool sounding track. Find more of it. It's Tom, G-U-E-R-R-A. Look him up. He's got, you know, great, talented guitar player, and Kenny's been with him for the last couple of years.
You know, Tom's written for Vintage Guitar Magazine for years, and he's really all about that, and he's just a really nice cat. Hey,
speaking of new music, John talking about doing any more recording?
Hasn't told me. Okay. Yeah. We all would love to do another record with John, Eddie.
Yeah,
I don't know.
It's been like 7 years since Old Brand New
it's
Me.
It's been a
it's
long
It's still
time.
Listed as the new album on his website.
I know, I know. No, he really should come out with something.
He's a talented songwriter.
He's a great songwriter. I've always loved John. You know, the first time I auditioned for John.
I like the story he wrote about that, by the way.
It was a good one. But the very first time that I played with him, every song he threw at me stuck with me after hearing it one time. Mm. And that doesn't happen a lot. And I just felt like really in tune to his music, you know, I just like, and he writes from.
He's a great wordsmith, that
he's
guy.
He's a great wordsmith, and he has a sensitive side, he has a funny side,
very.
He has a serious
and
side.
His songs
you
are
know,
so relatable.
And,
I mean, it
totally,
just,
and he's a great songwriter, and he's, you know, he's just a fun guy to be in a band with, and we have fun, and it's been like 25 years already.
I'm amazed.
So, John Eddy, if you're listening, put out a new album, because the fans would love it.
We got to get him on the podcast, too. Yeah. We've been talking about getting him on.
You should have him on the podcast.
Well, I want to get him in, and he's like, you know, he's a friend, and you know, I'm long overdue for inviting him to sing a song within the pocket. I mean, the guy's just really great.
Yeah. I finally got Bob Baru, so now
it's possible. I talked to John about it a while ago. I mean, look, I still remember playing on 2nd and Chestnut Street. It was Robert Hazard, the Hooters. John Eddy, I mean, he did Jungle Boy.
Right.
I remember that, you know. His friend Gary Gold was playing drums. Yeah, it was a really good band.
Yeah, Gary came back with him to join
with
the band.
Yeah,
for
and
a while.
I mean, and John was just, you know, great performer. Great, like, I admire
is.
That kind of writing.
Still
is. Oh, yep.
Still is.
Yeah, so we got to try to get him over here. And he lives in Nashville, right?
He's living in Nashville, and he basically comes up a few times a month for us to do shows together. And then he'll usually throw a solo show in for himself somewhere too. Like I think he's playing the Lox.
When's he doing that?
I think it's real soon. I forget the date, but it's soon. I should go see him.
So many guys. Yeah.
Well, you can certainly see Kenny with John Eddy, with In the Pocket, with the Bar Band. Got to wait a while to see him with the Yardbirds, but hopefully that'll be back again next year. It's pretty much see Kenny everywhere.
Kenny's a worker, man.
Yeah, so
he's doing it.
So, Dave, before we wrap up this week.
Big week.
Well, I do want to pay a little tribute once again to the Hooters, because next week you guys are going into the Philadelphia Walk of Fame on Tuesday.
Thank you.
So it's a little bit of a little treat for you. I'm going to have Marcus cue up the very first Hooters single ever released as we're celebrating 39 years of the Hooters.
Oh, yeah.
This was the first thing I ever owned from the Hooters. I think it was your first official release.
Oh, Fightin'?
Fight on the Same Side.
Wow.
The original version.
This is a good one.
This is the 45 version.
Bill Whitman did this. We did this at Cajun. This, you know. Check this out. This is cool. Tape.
Wow. If you can, why won't you talk about it? I'll come over there and we can talk about it.
Still, I like it.
I know this. You had said this is one of your favorite songs still.
I love it. I love playing it.
Break down all the battle lines. Open up your eyes, girl. Fight on the same side.
on.
A favorite ska feel of
mine. Yeah, I love that.
Totally ska. Yeah, you know, it's great.
Rock steady groove.
Oh, yeah. Hey, I just can't believe
what all good guitar solo on this. Yeah. A telly. I don't believe a word. We got to leave these troubles behind. Break down all the battle lines. Open up your eyes, girl. We're fighting on the same side. Here we go. Eric had a biting tone. It's great. Can't you see just how I feel about plays like Bobby Woods.
Yeah.
Hey, you remember me. You know how I surprisingly feel about steady. You, baby. No click. I told you so many times. You got to leave these troubles behind. Break down all the battle.
There it is.
You know, when you hear early stuff like that, you kind of like, I'm almost like holding my breath, like, oh, am I gonna, you know? But it holds up. It's great.
It was real good. You guys re-recorded it twice more, once for Amore, once for One Way Home, that was probably the best version.
Yeah, you know, so there's something about doing it the first time, and that one had like Bob. It was Kenny reminds me a lot of Bobby Woods, the way Bobby played, and had that real lock bass thing down, and John Kuzma, who was like, had a great rhythm feel, and I remember he was playing those up the up ska thing. He was a master at that, and fun times, man. Bill Whitman engineered that too at Cajun Studios, which was bought by the guys at Boys to Men. They own that studio. It was built in the woods there in Gladwin. It was a great studio. You know, it was a big deal for us, man.
Well, there you go. A little treat for Hooters fans and for Dave as we anticipate the Hooters going into the Walk of Fame next week.
Big week. Come out.
Pierre Robert, Evelyn Champagne King, the OJs. Yeah.
Philadelphia Orchestra,
and a couple other names.
Jody Gerson.
And the woman who donated tons of money. I'm drawing a blank on her name right now. Yeah. But that's Tuesday. There'll be a free ceremony in the afternoon down on Broad Street. And then gala celebration at night at the Bellevue. So big, big honor for the Hooters. And congratulations
it's
again.
Great. Thank you. So. Yeah. We love the city.
And much thanks once again for Kenny Aaronson to join us again.
That was great.
Thanks for having me, guys.
50th episode.
Great to see you.
And we were going to get a call, from a buddy of mine that I work with closely, but he's out in Los Angeles.
Maybe he's still sleeping.
He's probably sleeping, writing.
We'll get him on.
But I tell you, Kenny had there's such information, and I never get tired of hearing him talk about music. History of music, the Yardbirds, anything, and I've learned so much from him that it's been a great experience. So having him on, you could do a 2-hour podcast.
Well, it's not every day you have a man on who basically wrote or contributed mightily to a number one song.
Yeah, played with Bob Dylan, Joan Jett. I look over sometimes.
Brian Setzer, Rick Derringer,
great stuff with Brian Setzer. Bob Dylan, and I mentioned Billy Idol, he did that. It was cool, man.
Yeah. We'll just make every 6 or 7 weeks, we'll just bring Kenny back.
That's all right. I told Charlie, I got a shout out to Charlie Ingwe. I was talking to him on the phone today, and I said, this is what happens when you're my neighbor.
Hey,
come
Charlie.
On. Because Charlie was saying, Kenny's going to be a 3-timer on the show.
Yeah, he's our first. Like Saturday Night Live has the 5-time club.
Yeah.
We got to get Kenny on 2 more times. So he'll be our first 5-timer.
And I'm sure we got some stuff we didn't touch.
I love playing all the tunes that we do with Charlie, man. It's
is a beast, man. He's like the guy is just like so much energy and so much fun, I want to hear a record from him. I want to hear a new record from him.
Man,
I've been pushing for that because he's so good. You know, it's interesting to see him navigate life right now because of, you know, for so long he sang with his brother, right, and now trying to find your way. And but he's a fighter, man. He's in there and he has no quit in him, man. I love that about him.
Unfortunately, we have to have some quit in us because we are completely out of time.
Yeah.
Thank you again,
Marcus,
Kenny Aronson.
Was with us
thanks
this week,
to Marcus
awesome.
Tarpino back with us behind the glass. Okay. Thanks to our sponsors, GotPeace.com.
Yes, thank you.
And Behavioral Pediatrics and ABA Therapy Associates. Thanks to Wildfire Radio, Philly Rock Radio, and we'll see you next time.
Indeed.
On In the Pocket.
Bye-bye.